Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Story time.
Ever since I've known for myself, I have loved nature. I could even say that it's my passion, which is why the job of even a park ranger was perfect. Until one day, I worked at this nature park where the visitation hours were from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. There were many of us, and our shifts changed every week. So one week I would do first and the next week I would do second, and so on. One Friday, I was on the second shift, which meant I would stay until everybody left and check if everything was okay, then I was off. I did a short tour that a few visitors asked for that day, but other than that, it was pretty unengaged since I didn't have to do a lot. I was already walking and checking up on everything long before I was supposed to be done with work. It already got dark, and I was walking through the woods when I noticed a flash of lightning at me from behind me on one of the trees in the distance. It was weird. I went to check it out, but as I got to the point that I thought the light was coming from, suddenly it came at me again from the place that I'd come from. It was super weird, and I yelled out whoever was doing that to knock it off. As I said, the flash of light came from a completely different direction. There's no way that a person could travel that way in such a short time, so I realized I was probably being messed with by two different people. Figuring it was my coworkers, even though we weren't really close, nor do we ever do this kind of stuff, I yelled again. I was not going to participate in this stupid joke. Whoever or whatever it was should leave. I left. I did not have any control over this and could not do anything about it if they were purposefully trying to mess with me, so basically, it wasn't my problem. I informed my supervisor that somebody could still be in the park. He said that he would take over. I left and got in my car and began to drive home. I live about 10 minutes away from the park. Suddenly, I got a phone call from an unknown number. I answered it. Somebody told me in a raspy voice that I should not have left them there all alone, that I would regret it. I told them to never call me again and hung up. When I got to work, they told me they had found a dead dog at the place I'd reported the flashing lights. This was the work of an insane individual who was messing with me, somebody who would do something so horrid. I went camping with three of my buddies, Michael, James, and Kyle. We do this every year, it's kind of a ritual trip to reconnect with each other. We were all fresh out of college and decided to go on our yearly camping trip in August. We are from Oregon and ended up camping in the woods there, like we usually do, at the same spot. The first day was great, we set up our spots, explored the area, and by the time the sun was setting, we set up a campfire, made dinner, and after a few too many beers and some s'mores, we decided to go to sleep. It was a perfect way to end the day. Our second day was basically the same thing, hiking, food, one too many beers. But this night, we ended up being not so lucky. I remember watching some videos on YouTube, and we were laughing and having a good time. As we finished the rest of the beers, we were wrestling around with each other, like guys do, and suddenly, James stopped messing around and froze. Everyone was confused, but James claimed he heard something nearby. I told him it was most likely a squirrel, but he said no, it was most definitely not. He was scaring me at this point, and I decided to resume the wrestling session and took him down. We forgot about the whole thing until about 10 minutes later. We were tired from wrestling and joking around, so we decided to put the fire out and head into the tent. We had a 6-person tent, so we were all in one tent, just as our only light source besides our flashlights went out. I heard what sounded like cackling. I assumed it was one of the boys, because we were all clearly a bit buzzed, so everything seemed fine. I wanted to see what was so funny, so I turned the flashlight directly into Michael's face. I thought he was the one laughing. Michael's face was white as a ghost. He looked at me and said, "Did you guys hear that?" I said, "The laughing?" And Kyle said, "That wasn't you." We were all shaken and decided to go into the tent in silence. As we got into the tent, I pulled out an axe that I used to cut wood. It was the only source of protection we had. I was on the very end of the tent with Kyle and James, and in the middle was Michael. We were all silent, but I knew we were all wide awake after hearing the laughing. We weren't exactly at an actual campsite where there were other people around, we just walked into the woods, found an open spot, and set up camp. We were about a mile from our car, with barely any cell signal, so I guess you could say we weren't exactly in the safest position if there was a crazy maniac around. I got tired, so I dozed off. I have no idea how long I was sleeping before I heard laughing again. It's hard to describe, other than it sounded menacing. I froze and didn't move. I didn't even try to look over to see if my buddies were awake. The axe was under my pillow, and as I mustered enough strength to move to get the axe, I saw what looked like someone's finger pressed up against the tent, circling around it. Someone was definitely outside, walking around our tent, laughing. When they got to the front part of where the tent entrance was, they stopped. About 5 seconds went by before the person furiously shook the tent and screamed. That's when I knew my buddies were awake as well, because Kyle screamed like a little girl right after. Whoever was behind the tent laughed and again walked off. We laid there the rest of the night, wide awake, indefinitely sober. We didn't want to move out of pure fear that whoever was out there was still there. When the sun came up, we packed up everything and walked back to our car. We still go camping every year, but this time, we go to legit camping sites. I now bring a judge or a gun with me, and not just an axe. Whoever was outside our campsite could have easily been a deranged homeless person, psychopath, serial killer, meth head, or just an asshole playing a prank on us. But I sure as hell won't camp in a rural place anymore. Stay safe out there, it's a dangerous world we live in. This is not a personal experience of mine. However, a close friend's mother, who lives near Greendale, Wisconsin, related this story to me. She let her 2 dogs out into the backyard. Those familiar with the area know that Greendale is just a bit outside of Milwaukee. Her backyard is connected to a wooded area, so she's used to random wildlife. Deer come by frequently, and bears have been known to wander around from time to time, not to mention the countless smaller woodland creatures. This being said, she had a fairly disconcerting situation unfold. One night, she let her 2 dogs out before bed, a nightly occurrence, and she stayed with them as she often did. She regularly would sit on her patio until midnight or later, but not so anymore. As I said, she's used to seeing occasional wildlife, as are the dogs. This particular night, she let the dogs out, and they started to make for the yard. However, they stopped just past the patio and stared into the darkness of the trees. Unwilling to move further, she left her back door to try and coax them to hurry up and do their business. As she approached the edge of her patio, she noticed a particularly rancid odor. She said that it smelled like mothballs, rotting meat, and dead fish. Shortly thereafter, she heard a loud grunt and the rustling of foliage. She was very clear that the odor was no animal she had smelled before, and the grunt did not sound like that of a bear, even though one had been spotted in another area not super far from her place. 2, in fact, had been spotted. One had wandered onto the interstate and been struck by a truck. It was enough to shake her, and she didn't spook easily. Now, that would have been weird enough for her. However, the next day she let her dogs out and one had traveled a bit further into the foliage, before she called her back, heading in the same direction as they had been staring the night before. She called her back and she came. But it was off for her to have traveled that deep in. The next day, during daylight, she decided to trek in a bit and see if she could find any bear signs or anything like that. She didn't. What she did find was 3 squirrels, dead, lined up. Not end to end, but one then the next like lined paper, and spaced out evenly. The squirrels weren't bloody, nor mutilated as one would expect from a predator attacking and snacking. Just dead, and laid out evenly. I don't know what animal would do this, but it didn't sound like anything I had heard of a normal animal doing. Any insight into this weird happening? I was referred to you by a friend. I've been looking for answers and thought that I'd ask you. This was around September or October of 2017. My fiancé and I loved sitting in our backyard and enjoying the scenery. We live near Cheyenne Mountain in El Paso County, Colorado. We had seen some weird, unexplainable stuff on the top of the mountain. Once we were watching what we thought was a hiker before he ran towards the edge of a cliff and seemingly flew off the edge. This kind of stuff was the other half of why we loved sitting in our backyard and just watching the mountain and observing the sky. Back to the story. With all the strangeness, this by far was the most unexpected and unexplainable. One night, around 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. we were up late and felt like lying out back and stargazing. We dragged the dog's bed outside and threw a few blankets on top so we could lay on it. It was always windy, we lived at the base of a mountain so this was a part of life. We also had a flood wash behind our house, with a little running trail, that made our yard even more windy. As we watched the clouds pass under the stars, something large and humanoid glided over us. It looked like a man with wings, it did not flap, just glided over silently, I would say about 3,000 feet up. I am estimating this based on the height of the mountain. I am not sure, but it looked like it was at about the height of the mountain peak, below the clouds, gliding above our house, south, parallel to the mountain ridge. It was silhouetted against the clouds, the city lights barely illuminated it, but I could clearly make out the shape of a man with wings. My original thought was a hang glider, but it was super late at night and as far as I know, you don't just jump off of random mountains to do this. There are designated flying zones and you have to log quite a bit of flight hours to be able to fly alone. I also thought it was a vampire or gargoyle, but again I have not heard any legends or stories from this area. I have done a bit of research and my new thought is that someone may have released a flying fox. I looked up videos of them flying and they seem smaller than what I saw, but maybe someone had one that got too big and they let it loose. I have had friends that have exotic pet birds, cats, or monkeys, so I could see this happening. They seem like they need to flap a lot though, but I guess if it were higher up it would not need to so much. It had such a smooth, straight flight path it gave me doubts. This still seems like the most reasonable explanation. But, then again, with the sightings in Chicago and other places, I wonder if this winged humanoid phenomenon may be real. On this trip, I decided to hike the old Malala Indian Trail that followed the ridge tops from Saddle Blanket Mountain to Oak Ridge in Oregon, one of the Native Americans' favorite summer camps and trading centers. It was a beautiful August day, 2 days into the hike. I expected to be gone about 2 weeks, when literally out of the blue the most terrifying thing that ever happened to me in my life occurred. It would change my perspective of reality forever. I was walking along the trail enjoying the strong breeze and bright sunshine when, in the middle of a step, everything around me started to turn gray and blurry. The only way I can describe it was as if suddenly I was looking through someone else's prescription sunglasses. I finished the step and started another. Every inch I moved forward the darkness increased and the gray blurring turned into a jumble of shapes that made no sense. I then seemed to pass a barrier and everything started to return back into focus when my foot reached the ground on the second step. Everything around me had changed. Day had turned into night and there was no wind. All the Douglas fir and pine trees had been replaced with thick jungle-like growth. The cool thin mountain air was replaced with humid thick air. There were no stars in the sky, but there was a diffused light that let me see everything clearly. However, I couldn't tell what the light source was. As often happens when the human body receives a massive dose of adrenaline, the entire incident appeared like it was in slow motion, and even though I was only there for a second or two, I had time to observe my surroundings. The silence was broken by continuous high-pitched screaming sound, and I was nearly overwhelmed with a sense of fear and danger. My momentum caused me to take one more step before stopping in my tracks. It was at this point, I heard a whispered gotcha over my right shoulder. I couldn't tell if I heard it with my ears or inside my head. The word wasn't directed at me, but something said the word quietly to itself. I was so terrified I actually felt my heart stop for a moment. That whispered word is what saved me. I opened my mouth and gasped in a huge gush of thick air and recoiled backward in the same footsteps I had entered wherever I was. As I threw myself backward, I looked over my right shoulder. A dark-colored hairy right hand and arm were reaching for my throat over my shoulder. The hand had pale ivory spade-shaped fingernails. The nails looked clean and almost had a manicured look to them. The thumb was placed lower, towards the wrist, on the hand than a human's. Both hands and arms were thin and powerful-looking and both were covered with thick coarse black hair. I got a good look at it because the thumbnail grazed my neck, It did not break the skin, as I moved backward. As I continued backward, the hand clutched where my neck had been a split second before, and it seemed to fade off into the distance as I returned through the portal. I took two more steps backwards and everything reversed itself from what had just happened. The world around me became lighter, the fir and pines gradually came back into view, and by the third step, I was back on Saddle Blanket Mountain. I continued to move backward in terror, and as I did, I observed that where I had just come from was a shimmering oval patch of air about the size of a large door. The woods behind it looked like it was underwater. By the fifth backward step, the shimmering area seemed to just evaporate and everything was back to normal. By then my lungs had nearly burst from the volume of air I had inhaled during the huge gasp I had just taken. My body felt like it was on fire from the adrenaline surge. I spun around and ran back down the trail as fast as my legs could carry me, and didn't stop until I reached my truck. It took nearly 2 days to get to that place and about 3 hours to get back. On my way home, I was absolutely horrified at the thought of what would happen if I were to drive my truck into something like that. It had been a trap, pure and simple. Whatever it was that tried to kill me somehow kept the portal hidden from me on the way in, and I didn't actually see it until I was back out again. I had terrible nightmares for years, and still haven't come to grips with what happened. My fingers are trembling and the hair is standing up on the nape of my neck as I write this. Severely shaken, I've read everything I could get my hands on about people who have mysteriously disappeared throughout history and discovered several instances where people have vanished in plain sight of others. In quantum physics, people have a theory about parallel universes. My name is Jake, and I have a story to tell you about the Dog Man. I was actually raised on a story about Dog Man too, and I'm going to get my parents to contact you with their story as well. I just didn't want to wait to send this to you after finding your channel. I live in Ohio, and I have always thought of myself as a very down-to-earth person. Honestly, I'm not even sure I believe my parents' story that they would tell me as a kid. The thought of something that walks around on two legs looking like a werewolf straight out of Hollywood is pretty unbelievable. But trust me, there's something out there like that. This was not a normal wolf, and it was definitely not a bear. A couple of things you should know about me for context: I was raised to be an honest person. I can thank my parents for that. I've never been much of a partier, I've never experimented with drugs, and I've only had the occasional drink. I was 19 when this happened. My girlfriend who was in the car was the same age, and my little brother was 17. It was January when it happened. It wasn't snowing that particular night, and we all saw the same thing. I know a lot of people email you saying they saw something they can't explain. I guess now I'm one of those people. This happened to us near Montgomery County. It wasn't too long of an encounter, but I know exactly what I saw that night. It was the Dog Man. I know this because of the story that my parents told me that happened before I was born. Like I said, I was raised on that story, even if I didn't believe it as a teenager. I was scared of those stories as a child. As a boy who had recently graduated high school the June before this happened and on my way to adulthood, I learned through this experience that my parents were not making it up. If I'd been alone when I saw that thing, I might have had the smallest notion that I imagined it or that it was a hallucination or a dream. But I wasn't alone. My girlfriend Brienne was there, my brother Ryan was there, and they both saw it too. It wasn't even too late at night, not even 11 o'clock. It was a clear night, so the vision was perfect. None of us had any type of alcohol or drug in our system. We all saw the same thing. We all wrote down what we had experienced when we got back to the house. We all believed it was a Dog Man we saw that night. And so this is what happened. The three of us were driving back from seeing a movie, Black Panther, and we were talking on one of the back roads as we drove back. We were headed to my house. Ryan had a curfew since he was still in high school, but he was with us so it was kind of relaxed. Still, we didn't want to take advantage of my parents' rules, so we were going straight home from the movie. I was going slightly over the speed limit just because I wanted to get Ryan home. I was driving, Brienne was sitting next to me, and Ryan was in the back seat. All of us were wide awake and discussing what we liked about the movie and how we couldn't wait for the next Marvel film to come out. But then Ryan pointed out of the front window and blurted out, "What in the hell is that?" Our lights bounced off of something, some kind of animal, and as we rounded the corner, we got a good look at it. This thing was standing on the side of the road just at the corner, still in the grassy area but almost on the road itself. It was standing on two legs just like a human. I slowed to barely a crawl because I was intrigued as to what this creature could be. I shouldn't have done that. I should have just kept going. This thing looked over at us and actually lifted an arm that was ending in a clawed hand to shield its eyes from the light. Before it did that, though, the headlights seemed to reflect in its eyes, giving it that glow of a nocturnal animal. Now, I want to be specific with this because I know a lot of people say that they seem to be glowing themselves, but these eyes definitely just reflected the light of our headlights, and I knew instantly what we were looking at because of that damn story that my parents used to tell me. So did my brother, and he yelled out, "It's the dog man." I stopped the car because I didn't want to go past it. I didn't turn it off. I left it running, obviously, but I didn't want to go past this thing. Brienne was screaming at me to go. Ryan just kept yelling, "It's the dog man." Over and over, pointing and saying, "Look, look, it's the dog man." Like I could possibly be focused on anything but the creature that was in front of us. My parents always said that it was huge, but I guess I never appreciated just how big this thing actually was until I saw it for myself. It had to be 7.5 feet tall at minimum. Brienne thinks the same thing, but Ryan says it was bigger, maybe even 8.5 feet tall. It was ripped, too, like a bodybuilder that spent all day every day lifting weights, especially the shoulders. It looked capable of carrying off extremely heavy prey, or at least pinning it down and killing it quickly. The quads of this thing were extremely thick and muscular too, bigger than even a pro wrestler's quads. It was a really dark brown color, like the same coloration of the werewolf in Silver Bullet. In fact, it looked a lot like that werewolf, except way, way bigger. This was definitely not a guy in a suit. It had a long muzzle like a dog or wolf and big ears too. The hands on this thing were deadly. I could see the one that it was using to cover its eyes very clearly. It had long, wicked-looking claws that looked like a fingered hand. It wasn't a paw, it was a hand, and those claws looked capable of evisceration. I could see the flesh on the palms. It was also a very dark brown color but definitely hairless. Also, it was definitely male. I could see the boy parts, but the penis didn't look human. It looked more canine. The dog man put his hand down after the initial light hit his eyes, and it stared at us. He didn't seem angry or aggressive, but he also didn't seem the least bit scared. It was like it was waiting for us to make a move so it could decide how to react to it. I remember the sounds of the windows going up distinctly from the passenger seat and the back seat. I rolled mine up too. I really didn't know what to do at that point. I wanted to get out of there, but I also wanted to see this thing since I'd heard the story of my parents' encounter all my life. Ryan and Brienne were both telling me to go, but I was scared because there was no way I could gain enough speed before we passed that thing. I didn't want it attacking the car or breaking a window and pulling one of us out. I felt responsible for all three of us. My girlfriend that I needed to protect and my baby brother who I had always looked out for. I knew I had to do something, though, because we were in the middle of the street, and I didn't want anyone to come up behind us and hit our car. So I decided that maybe flashing my brights might scare it off. So I quickly turned them on and off several times. When I did this, the dog man threw both hands up to its face to cover its eyes and started shaking its head wildly like the lights were too bright for its eyes. And I knew then that my idea wasn't exactly the best. I think all I really managed to do was piss it off. It looked at us again, and it let out this roar or scream that was so loud we could hear it inside the car with the windows up. I knew I messed up. Brienne started screaming too, and my brother started yelling, "Get out of here, we need to get out of here, the dog man's gonna get us." Then this thing put its hands down and actually charged straight at us. Ryan was screaming at this point to drive. He was hysterical. I slammed my foot on the gas, but like I thought, we didn't build up much speed. It looked like that dog man was going to plow right into the front of the car, but as it ran by us, it moved to the right at the last second, and we sped by it. I was too busy trying to get out of there, but Ryan gave a very good description to me of what happened next. When we passed by it, it spun around to look back at us and roared again. Ryan said the tail lights were illuminating it, and the expression on its face was the angriest that he's ever seen. He could see it snarling and saw long teeth that looked just as deadly as the claws. Ryan said it dropped down to all fours and bounded after us for a few leaps, but it stopped almost as soon as it started, like it automatically gave up or it wasn't interested in us. Then it went back down, like it was doing a push-up motion, but as it came back up, it sprang back on two legs and took off onto the other side of the road. Then he lost sight of it in the darkness. I honestly think that that creature was giving us a bluff charge to get us the hell out of there. It's like we couldn't decide what to do, so he decided what we should do for us. Believe me, it worked. We got out of there. The whole way back to our house, all three of us were talking over each other trying to discuss what we had just seen. I was still so nervous that I was shaking, and my hands were freezing. I really thought that I was gonna throw up at that point too. But what I can remember the most about that part is how cold my fingers were. I don't know why I remember that so vividly, but because it was so vivid, I just figured I'd throw that in there too, maybe so you guys could feel how scared I was. Ryan was just yammering about seeing a werewolf and that our parents were telling the truth our whole lives. He was talking about what the odds could be that a seeing one was the same one that my parents saw. I have to admit that thought crossed my mind too, especially when it was right there. I wasn't sure, though, since they'd seen it hours away from where we saw it and it was before I was even born, so that thing must have been really old. But I wasn't ruling out the possibility that it was the same creature. My girlfriend, my poor Brienne, looked like she was on the verge of tears, and she wouldn't let go of my hand. She was dumbfounded that my parents were telling the truth too. I mean, of course I told her the story about 100 times that they claimed that they saw some type of werewolf creature way back in the day, but I don't think that she believed them either. I guess she was just as skeptical as I was, but none of us were skeptics anymore after that. We all saw the same damn thing as my parents did. When we got home, we immediately told my parents that we saw the same type of creature that they saw. They shrugged and said it was a dog man, and then they sat us down. And we all just talked about what we felt about it. Terrified, mostly. That was the general feeling between the three of us, terror. My parents were understanding. We described what it looked like, hoping that it might be the same one, but the color didn't match. I'll let them tell you all about what they saw when they contact you. My fear, though, is that Ohio has several of these things running around, maybe even a breeding population. And the reason I think this is because this happened more than 20 years after my parents' encounter. This thing that we saw didn't look old. It didn't look the way that a dog or a wolf does when they're aging. But then I thought to myself, who knows how long these things live? And so I ask you, exactly how long are these lives capable of for these creatures? When I was a kid, we had this big lab mix that we had to put to sleep when he was 14 years old. And the vet told us that he was really old for a dog. I mean, unless these things live longer, which I'm not saying it's not a probability, I really don't think that it was the same one, especially when you throw in the fact that the coat wasn't the same color either. It scares me to think of what's out there. How many of these things are running around Ohio? How many of these things are running around the United States? All I know is I no longer think my parents were telling us the story of the dog man just to keep us in line. They were telling us the truth. This was told to me by my dad. First and foremost, my dad was not a believer in aliens, ghosts, Bigfoot, or portals. But this he couldn't explain away. My dad was a coon hunter. He owned several dogs and had many friends that coon hunted with him. This happened in the late 1960s. He said one night he and a buddy took their dogs on a late night run. There is a small conservation area about 5 miles from our house with picnic tables and primitive campsites. A natural spring runs through the area and it's just a beautiful place, he said. They let their dogs out and were sitting on the tailgate of the truck listening to them run. He said they treed a coon and he and his buddy walked to where they were. These dogs were highly trained to stay at the tree and not to leave until they got there. He said they got the dogs leashed up and were starting for the truck when the dogs started whining and whimpering, acting completely out of character. His big male hound cowered down and took off, breaking the hold my dad had on him. He said they heard a noise like nothing either of them ever heard before. Mind you, these two men had been in the Missouri woods all their lives. He said it was a growling noise and they could hear footsteps circling them. They both had headlights on and both of them tried to see whatever it was, but it kept out of the light. He said it started chattering like to itself and continued stalking them. He took his gun he carried out and shot into the air a couple of times and the stalking and chattering just stopped. He said they took the dogs and quickly made their way back to the truck. My dad's old male dog was there waiting for them. He said the dogs were acting so strange, cowering and trembling. They got their dogs loaded up and when they checked the time, over 2 hours was missing. He said the tree the dogs were at wasn't very far from the truck, so walking to them, getting the dogs and back to the truck would have been 30 to 45 minutes at the most. He said they never discussed it with anyone but each other. He didn't tell me until I was grown. After he passed, I asked my mom if he told her. She said he did the night it happened and he was scared. My dad was never scared of anything, but that he couldn't explain. He was pale, just telling me the story. He said they were stalked by something with heavy footsteps that chattered to itself. This was in the summer late at night near Rolla, Missouri. I don't know to this day what it was exactly I saw that night while camping in LBL, land between the lakes, in western Kentucky. Anyway, this happened a bit over 2 decades ago when I was 17 years old. My dad hunted, mainly bow hunting, there regularly, and while I never was a hunter, I loved camping in the woods. We never used any formal campsite back then. We'd drive along the trace, turn off onto one of the numerous side roads, and then, near a creek bed, usually dry or just a small trickle from a spring, unless it had rained, we had our usual campsite. We pulled the car off the road, set up the tent, tarp it all over angled. And Dad would do his thing while I would do mine. Typically, if I went with him, that meant, and this time as well, he'd trek off to his stand and would be gone most of the day. While he was off, I'd hike a bit. LBL, while big, is not a place one could easily get lost in if you have basic survival skills, read, or just relax. For me, it was a place to go to get away from it all and get lost in nature. This time, this early morning, he had left after a quick breakfast, a chill and dampness in the air, and the smell of fall coming in. Any of the outdoor types will understand that smell of wet leaves during fall. I mention this only as it will be relevant later. Anyway, Dad had left and headed out for a very early morning hike. I set off in the usual direction, opposite from the road we were near, mostly following near the creek but not along it directly. I had a compass if I needed, but I never did. I had grown up in the Jackson Purchase and it was home. I loved nature and never felt uncomfortable out in the woods. Before long, however, cresting a small hill, I heard rustling among the trees. While the leaves were starting to fall, most were still up, fall at its prettiest. I slowed only for a moment. I'm used to those sounds, squirrels typically, bounding from tree to tree. But then, it got louder, heavier, unlike any sound I've heard trees make outside of them breaking under ice or age. It was hard to focus on the sound, like it was coming from all around me, but not, and in every direction I turned, I saw trees in the distance shaking, as if something large just jumped from them, but saw nothing else. Despite years of being in the woods, I felt something I never really had before. Fear. Not terror, that would come later, but actual fear. Almost as soon as it had started, the rattling, violent shaking of trees, it suddenly stopped. Nothing. No sound at all. Not quiet, but an absence almost. Somehow that relaxed me. I had been exposed to that stillness before, and while the violent rustling of multiple trees felt alien, this was familiar. I thought about going back, until I saw in the distance, near the last tree that shook, a slim dark figure. I couldn't make her out, somehow I felt it was a female, but she was up near the ridge ahead and I felt compelled to head to her and I did. I know that sounds crazy, and typing it down now, I still do, but then, I rationalized it as I wonder if she heard all that too? Perhaps she saw what it was. But as I walked towards her, she slid away, staying just barely visible among the trees. The sky was just starting to really lighten up, that transition from dawn to morning. And slid was the right word I feel. She moved what appeared to be normal, but the distance she seemed to cover was unnatural. I'm tall at over 6 feet tall, but my strides covered half the distance hers did and she seemed normal sized as a dark featureless shape could be. I mean I could see a head, arms, legs, and what appeared to be dark but normal clothing, but I couldn't track her. Focusing on her was hard and outside of knowing it was a female, I could tell nothing else as she disappeared and reappeared among the trees, a couple hundred yards ahead of me, walking slowly yet somehow covering distances at running speeds. Again, I don't know why I followed her, but I did, down a hill, through some fog, until I neared a clearing. I lost sight of her as I neared it and things got darker, like when the sun crawls behind a dense cloud except there were none that I could see, though the sun was still too low for me to catch. The stillness, familiar, was there, but that didn't bother me. It was the smell that did. Every step closer to the clearing, I noticed it more and more, and though I couldn't find her, and I desperately wanted to find her, sent alarm bells through me. I've been both before and since, in the woods hundreds of times. One thing I have never experienced since that weekend was the complete absence of smell. Nature has a smell, not a stink, but one that is distinct. One of decay and life, of plants and trees and creeks and stagnant ponds. And while, depending on where you are, you may or may not smell the same odors. Except, there. There was nothing. That lack slowed me, stopped me, and only then did I see her, across the clearing, looking at me. I wish I could say she was giant and hairy, or an alien gray. She looked normal. Indistinct and unmemorable, except for her smile. When she smiled, I ran. I had been scared before, with the trees, out in the middle of LBL. But that, the lack of any smell, sound, and that smile, it terrified me, and I ran. I was crying and terrified and I had no idea why I should be. I stopped about halfway back and everything was brighter and despite my terror, I still wanted to turn back. I did look back and though she was just a shape again, she was there, closer, freezing as I spotted her. A smile again, but one I felt and did not see and I ran, all the way back to the tent. I got in it and cried, shaking in a terror I did not and could not understand. I stayed in the tent until my dad got back and I didn't tell him about it. By then the terror had faded and while I couldn't explain it, I knew something horrible would have happened had I gone into the dark clearing that had no smells or sound. By night, I had almost convinced myself I had half imagined it all, when, stepping away from the tent to relieve myself, that stillness came over and I froze. I looked among the trees but saw nothing until I saw two reddish lights, moving in the distance. I knew the terrain and knew it had to be uphill from me, but the eyes were descending. I felt her in the sense I had felt it was a woman earlier, coming my way and I felt a smile that was not a smile even though I could not see it. I ran back to the tent and my dad was there, staring into the fire and when I yelled at him, he just sat there, not responding. I shook him, feeling those eyes, that her behind, and then, even the fire had no smell to it. It was just nothing. I shook my dad harder, screaming at him, and then suddenly, the fire was crackling, I could smell the smoke, and the stillness was gone. My dad asked me what the hell I was yelling about and when I told him, he gave me that sideways glance that said, "Are you okay?" After much pressuring, we left and while I barely held it together, as soon as I got in my room at our house, I cried. Not because I had embarrassed myself, but because of relief. I knew for a fact, had I not reached my dad, and had not shaken him, that I would have wandered off in the dark. Just like I would have wandered off in the morning, following her. She wanted me in that clearing, which felt wrong, and smelled of nothing, and I wonder and have wondered so many nights what would have happened. I probably and hopefully will never have an answer, I just pray I never see or feel her again. I've been in the woods since then, both near there and in other woods, and never have I felt that way again. But still, every time the woods get quiet, I get scared. I don't know if any of this applies to this here, but I hope you might understand. It's followed me for over 2 decades and I don't know how the hell you can feel a smile, but that was the most terrifying experience in my life and I had to get it out. At the time I was in second grade. I don't know if it was the spring or the fall, but it was during recess and the weather was warm enough to play outside. My classmate and I walked to the side of the school, Peebles Elementary, North Allegheny School District, during recess. All of the other children were in the main play area at the back of the school. Our school janitor, Mr. Swan, appeared and waved us over toward the basement area of the school. There was an entryway into the furnace room of the school. Mr. Swan told us to come over and see what was in the furnace room. Inside, there was a small Jetson-like disc. It would have been about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. It had seating for two. I don't have a clear memory of the vehicle except that it was a silver-gray metallic color, very smooth. I can't clearly remember the roof of the craft, but I think it was clear or missing entirely. I vaguely remember a panel of controls and something like blue vinyl seats. My friend said, Mr. Swan caught the flying saucer in the baseball field of the school. I remember her sliding down against the wall and falling asleep. Then a little gray man appeared from behind the furnace. I remember laughing because my girlfriend fell asleep, and then being amazed at the little man. He was about the same size as me. I was not afraid of him at all. He talked to me in my head and through feelings and thoughts. He never moved his mouth. He had skin the color and shading like ashes from a cigarette. I don't recall any clothing or any sexual characteristics about him. He had large black eyes, but they were kind and sincere. He had no nose, maybe just a couple small holes, and his mouth was just sort of a line. It did not open. I don't remember any ears. He had long arms for the size of his body and I think only 4 fingers on each hand, which seemed very long. He kept his arms to his sides. He had 2 legs and his feet seemed different somehow from ours. I simply cannot remember exactly what they were like. His body was childlike, not muscular at all. He said to me in my head, "We are here to remind you who you are." I still, to this day, have no idea what he meant. I am now 49, somehow, I was able to know how the flying saucer worked. It had something to do with a force of energy which pushed out at the bottom of the craft, along with a corresponding force which sucked in. It makes me think of what a hovercraft is like, only with much more force and no sound. This was what was broken on the craft and the janitor had taken it inside to hide it while the entity was repairing it. There was another little man somewhere in the room who was injured from the crash. I have no recollection of him except for the sense that he was there and that he was hurt. My mother recalls me coming home from school and talking about Mr. Swan and the flying saucer. Mom was concerned about me being escorted into the basement of the school by the janitor, but after asking me several questions, and was satisfied that nothing inappropriate had occurred. But I never mentioned the little man. Something tells me I wasn't supposed to remember the man until later in life. Because I did not remember the man until I was 29. My school friend only remembers the craft, and described it as having no bolts or rivets. She grew up with a dad who flew a small plane and would know those terms to describe a plane. She has no recollection of a little man, but again, she fell asleep when he appeared. I've told this story to friends and family only, for fear of being ridiculed. My children are in this school, and it's been remodeled. I have never asked anyone at the school about the craft or dear Mr. Swan. He's got to be in his 80s now. I sure wish I knew what the little man was referring to when he said they were here to remind me who I was. My experience with the reptilian woman happened in 1991 when I lived with my grandparents in Belgrade, Serbia. I came there only to visit them in the spring, but I had to stay there because the war started in Croatia and shells were falling on my city. I had no friends there, and I would be bored in my room watching TV, so I often took the bus around the city without a specific goal, I just wandered. My grandfather registered me as a war refugee, so I had a free ticket with which I could ride as much as I wanted. That night I was returning home as always by bus number 37 and I was sitting in the part of the bus where the seats were opposite each other. A woman was sitting right in front of me. She looked attractive, in her 30s I think. She had makeup on her eyes and mouth and a hat on her head. Something inexplicably drew me to her, so I kept looking into her eyes. She persistently avoided my gaze. She looked left and right the whole time, so our eyes never met. And then I suddenly noticed how with her mouth closed, she was touching the inner part of her cheek with her tongue. That was strange to me, but I continued to look into her eyes without stopping. Then she looked me directly in the eyes for the first time. She threw out her snake's tongue and started hissing at me. Suddenly I became completely paralyzed, my vision got darker and I saw a bunch of black dots. I felt terrible fear and I thought I wouldn't survive. I don't know how long I was in that state, I couldn't move a bit. At one point the bus stopped at the station, the door opened and I somehow managed to get up and run out of the bus. I don't even know how I got home, I only know that I ran as fast as I could. For the next 2 days, I felt completely exhausted. I was like in some kind of delirium. My grandmother had to carry food to my bed. It was only on the third day that I could function normally again. That's my true story. About 10 years ago, I was young, naive, and living on my own for the first time. I was also about half a planet away from my family. I was thinking of using this as inspo for a horror story, but have no solid ideas where to take it just yet, so reckon I just put the experience up here. Anyway, I was looking for a room, small flat, something to rent, as I was moving out of my uni dorm. I wasn't super picky, I just wanted somewhere where I could have alone time, that was close-ish to the campus and work, and where I could have a cat. The last bit, pet-friendly, made me have to broaden my standards a bit. I went to a lot of unique homes in this search, from a share house with someone who stared weirdly at me and offered to treat me, on first meeting, with Reiki, to a house filled with about 30 stone people and no drawers, for some reason. The weirdest, though, was this one guy. I found the listing on Craigslist. Young, naive, as I was only ab-fived wary when he said the place was hard to find, so he'd meet me at this cross street and show me where the place was. For smarter people, big red flag number one. I did, at least, start to really clue in with big red flag number two. When I met him, in the evening on this cross street, he stank of stale wine. And he seemed just off. The shifty eye thing, the smile that takes a second longer than it should to appear. I tried to put it down to a bit of social anxiety, or something, hoping for the best. Because, by the time I was really getting cold feet, we were on that cross street, and a bus had pulled up. "We've got to take the bus," he tells me, "to get to his place." Here was me thinking it was just a short walk from the cross street. Nope. Now it's a bus journey. Not knowing what to do, I get onto the bus. At least there are other people on it, right? And I'm a big girl. I've got my big girl heels on, I'm living on my own. And nothing bad happened to me any of the times I'd walk through the part of town with a lot of homeless people at night, or at any of the other houses. My wariness was just me being a wuss. We make small talk. He stinks of stale wine. He's acting delayed and nervous. But he's shorter than me, at least. The house is in a great area. He's telling me. It's a basement flat, but it's so accessible by public transport. Where do I go to school? Where do I work? That sort of small talk. I think I avoided telling him too much, but honestly don't remember. We get to a stop, and he hustles us off. The house is a bit of a walk along a dark street. The house itself is nice, clapboard, big, with a separate basement entrance. From what I can tell, no one else is around, but there are lights on in the upstairs part of the house. The door to the basement flat leads straight into a kitchen-living room combo. It's old. There's stains on the walls and the ragged carpet. Grime caked in all corners. The only furniture, beside basic kitchen stuff, is a dirty mattress or futon on the floor and a TV, also on the floor. It's a nope. If it wasn't before, it really was a big nope by then. But this dude's got my elbow. I'm smiling and nodding as he leads me on the tour. He's telling me about the other guy who lives here. Med student, he tells me. This med student is there, in his room. He won't bother us. He doesn't come out of his room. Almost never does he come out. The dude laughs awkwardly. Really, he just about never comes out. Dunno what he does in there. Mr. Stale Wine Stink leads me down a corridor as shitty as the living room. That's his room, the med student's. The door is shut. But the med student, Stale Wine assures me, is really in there. But he won't come out, almost never does. I hear absolutely nothing from this med student room. It's silent. I get shown the grotty bathroom, at the end of the corridor, and then, smiling and nodding, I start easing back to the living room. I'll think about it, oh absolutely, yeah. I'm telling him. I just told some other people I was going to look at their places too, make sure I check out enough to make a decision, you know. He just wants to keep chatting. That awkward, nervous smile, always appearing a moment later than it should. I've got no idea whether I should just make a break for it or what. Then there's a knock on the front door. It's the lady who owns the house, and lives upstairs, I gather. She wants to talk about rents, or something. Mr. Stale Wine grabs her by the arm, and yanks her aside like he doesn't want me hearing what she's got to say. Which meant he left the door open, and I skedaddled. He called after me. I just ran. Wasn't sure where I was, and wasn't looking back. Eventually found a train station, after pounding up my feet running in those heels. Really should have called the cops for that woman, or done something there. I gotta hope she's okay. I didn't know the house address, if that's any excuse for not doing so, and it was before ubiquitous access to Google Maps on every phone. So once I was away, and just tagging along big roads looking for a train station, I had no idea where the house was. Never heard back from the guy either. This was Vancouver, so if this fits some MO of a killer or similar back then. Maybe let me know? I guess if he was and wasn't caught I might be able to provide some info. But, man, and this is where I think I'd take my horror story, what the hell was in that room? I was living in an apartment in the Midwest. Alone, like I like it. I, however, was about to make the move to the East Coast to share a place with someone I liked enough, not a lover, to sacrifice my love of solitude for. Okay, I don't necessarily love it, I just love doing what I want, no matter how disgraceful, without the inevitable judgment of another's presence. Also, the prospect of splitting rent was seemingly appealing, at the time. But that's another story. So, I utilized Craigslist to get the lease out of my hands as that was the deal I had with my landlord. Leave only after searching and finding someone to live in my apartment after me. This person would then go through the same process I did for approval. I'm not sure if this is how it's always done with apartments, but I found it to be fair enough. Lots of women came through. One young woman came through who fell in love with it. She had been a singer in her youth, she was still young, we both were, I couldn't help but wishing we had been friends. But I was living. And strangely enough I was going to the place she grew up. Something about her. I was drawn to. Her name was Emma. Now I sound like the creep. I digress. I got an email from a young man, around college age, who said he had multiple roommates and wanted to live in the isolating solitude of a high-rise studio. Great. While I'm writing and remembering him, I'm realizing that he is definitely on Reddit and may see this. Awkward. Oh well. I forgot his name. But the one he gave me, probably a moniker, was unique, so I'd withhold it even if I remembered it. I guess I just wanted to for my own sake. So I go into the closet, which is a walk-in off the living room or bedroom area. I call out to him, either in response to a question he had asked or to let him know something. As I'm mid-answer or remark, I step into the living area. I have a table and chair set up with a laundry bin behind it. I kind of tucked it away knowing people would be coming through, but I didn't consider hiding it because boundaries are usually enough to keep us from peering into unnecessary items. I mean, it was a studio, so personal items, including my bed, were out and most people didn't make this fact uncomfortable. Now, though, as my own sense of boundaries has increased, I'd probably hide away any and all items that are more personal, like laundry. So as I walk out, he is hovering over the mesh basket, with a pair of my panties in his hand. He drops them immediately and my eyebrows scrunch in a quick "that was weird, what are you doing?" kind of way. I looked away and walked fast, near the door, then faced him and pretended like nothing happened. "I'm sorry, I didn't know what to do." My reaction didn't match the inappropriateness of what he was doing. "That's what I did though." He too acted like nothing happened and began to walk towards the door. He word stumbled about liking the apartment and giving me a call if his parents agreed to co-sign. I was glad to have him out. I assume he had no interest in the apartment, but maybe he just saw an opportunity. So weird. I felt violated when he left. I was in college, and my junker car died. The engine would need to be rebuilt, along with some other car issues I didn't really understand, and I didn't have the money to fix it. I saw an ad looking for a fixer-upper that this guy could work on with his son. Cool. I sent an email to him saying that I had a car if he wanted to check it out, and he was interested. The next evening, he came by with his wife to look at the car. My daughter was playing with her toys on the porch of the little apartment I was renting. I told him everything I knew about the car, explained that he'd have to tow it out because it doesn't start anymore, and he seemed really interested. His wife didn't say much. He told me they had to talk about it and would get back to me. The next morning, I checked my email and saw one from the guy. He wanted to buy the car and would give me exactly what I asked for it. He'd be by later. Cool, that worked for me. But then, during my lunch break, I got another email. "After meeting you and your daughter, I was hoping you'd look at my Craigslist ad, link below, and consider this proposition. Not sure if you have a boyfriend or not, but I'd certainly like you to consider having this type of discreet relationship with me. I can help cover bills, etc., if you'd share a bit of time with me. If you're interested, please respond, and let's meet to discuss. If not, no offense intended, and if I don't hear back from you, I'll take that to mean you're just not interested." The link was to a Craigslist ad for a sugar baby. I didn't respond. I mean, he even said if I didn't respond, he'd take it as a no. That'd be the end of it, right? Silly, naive me. After work, I picked up my daughter and went home, and the guy shows up, alone. Stupidly, I answered the door. He asked if we were still good with the car, and I just nodded like an idiot. He said then he'd have to go pick up his wife, and they'd be back with a trailer in a few hours. He mentioned that he told her he had to work late but really got off early and was just killing time. Again, idiotically, I said okay, come back with your wife, and shut the door. He did come back a few hours later with his wife, bought the car, and left again. After he left, my neighbor came over to let me know that the guy had been by when I was at work and had waited at my house, peeking through my windows, for a good 20 minutes before leaving. Finally, I called the police to file a report, but technically, nothing he did was illegal. The detective said most likely the guy wouldn't be a problem because I had pretty obviously shut down his offer. And he wasn't a problem again. But that weekend, I went and picked up my dog from my mom's house. That dog barked at everything and was very protective of us.